Welcome to KHD Bible Study. My name is Emmanuel. I'm a teacher and an elder at Kehilath Haderach Messianic Synagogue in New York City. I lead a detailed study of the Holy Scriptures from a Messianic Jewish perspective, chapter by chapter, adding historical context to the events, people, and places. Each week, passionate people gather to read the Scriptures, discuss the significance, and ask questions that help to bring out a deeper understanding of the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. We hope you will join us as we explore and read the book of Isaiah. Thank you all for coming. I hope that you will not be angry with me when I give you a million scriptures today. I promise it will not be a million, but it might be a few. And just take the ones that you're interested in, and at some future point, I will take my notes and turn them into a PDF that you can use to help you study as we dig deeper into the subject. So today, we are going to talk about the day of the Lord. And if you have the flyer, which I hope all of you do, you notice it's called the Day of the Lord's Vengeance. Throughout the scriptures, it has a number of names. What many of us do not realize is that the day of the Lord has happened several times and is going to happen again on a global scale later, quite possibly, if not in our lifetimes, in the lifetimes of our children. So, by the way, Yeshua's apostles or Yeshua's disciples, each one of them believed it was going to happen in their lifetime. Just so you know that even though you may hear us say these things, we are not alone. Paul believed it would happen in his time, but he also became aware as he got closer to the end of his time that he was going to finish his work and that the day of the Lord was going to happen after his time. Peter believed that the day of the Lord was going to happen in his time. And of course, John also believed that the day of the Lord was going to happen in his time. And John lived the longest of all the apostles. So we don't control the time, as Yeshua said. That is in the hands of the Father. He alone knows when it's time to enact his vengeance on all the nations. And he has very specific reasons. And he has very specific people that he intends to protect. And then, of course, we know that there will be other events that will happen after this day of the Lord. As I mentioned on previous sessions, the day of the Lord is not a day. It's not one day. It's not 24 hours. It can be anywhere from 24 hours up to several years. In previous iterations of the day of the Lord, the day of the Lord went on for several years. It did not happen in one day. For Israel, the northern kingdom, it did not happen in one day. For Judah, as a matter of fact, it went over several years for Judah in waves. The conquest went on in waves. And as we all talked about when we were going through those prophets previously. So it literally spread out over several years. In the case of the fall of Jerusalem in the time of the Romans, the day of the Lord took place over several months. Titus and his army came in, they surrounded the city, they broke down the walls, they starved the people, and that went on for quite some time, possibly as long as a year before they finally were able to get in and push the stones off the Temple Mount where they are, where many of them still are today. And of course, devastated and destroyed the people and then carried off many, many, many people as captives to Rome, where many of them were marched in a parade. And that parade was turned into a triumphant arch, which stands to this day in Rome. The Arch of Titus is quite, although in his day, in the days when the arch was put up in Rome, it was actually in full color in all its grisly details. Over the centuries, the paint has worn away, and it is now just a great white structure or a great gray structure, but originally it had full color. And I think I've shown some of you pictures of what the color recreations look like from the paint. You can fleck the paint off the stone and see that it really typically that it used to be colored. Okay, let's go ahead and start. First, look at the flyer. The Day of the Lord's Vengeance. This chapter, this section of chapters employs the classic style of Isaiah, where Adonai speaks freely between the future, the present, the near future, and the far future. And I have asked, can you correctly divide the time periods? Now, if you've been with me for a number of prophets, most of you can read the text and see when the Lord is jumping from the present to the near future to the far future. Each section and each nation mentioned in this section of chapters, verses chapters 13 through 23, has clear time markers. Clear markers in the text that informs you that these events, what time period these events are taking place in. So we're going to challenge those. We're going to challenge our memory today because it's going to, Isaiah is written before the fall of Jerusalem, before the fall of the second kingdom, and actually written a little bit before the fall of the northern kingdom. So Isaiah sits in that sandwich time period between the fall of the two kingdoms. So just before we get started, there's going to be a couple of questions that you'll be looking for as we read. According to the text of Isaiah chapter 14, who is the true ruler behind the empires that have broken many nations? That's what we will look at that in chapter 14, and I think you'll all recognize who that is. We'll be looking for the clues to indicate the identity of this ruler. Is Isaiah chapter 22 a vision of a future, or did these events happen in Isaiah's future? Now, I've kind of let the cat out of the bag already, and I'll let you know that some of these events, both here in this section, have happened multiple times. But it's good to know where you are or which period is being discussed in that particular chapter. Which prophet, other than Isaiah, also pronounced the fate of Tyre in chapter 23? Now, if you were really astute, you heard in the introduction that I spoke that I mentioned this covers several time periods. So your head should have been thinking, I know who the prophets were during those events. Can you recall who besieged the city, when and by whom was it liberated? We've covered this already, so you're gonna have to put on your thinking caps, as they used to say back in the old days. And then the last question is, what will be the destiny of Ethiopia and the nations to the south of Ethiopia after the future day of the Lord? What will become of Egypt and also Assyria after this day of the Lord? And as I've told many of you, you know that Assyria did not disappear from history. It changed names and locations just like Babylon did. Babylon still exists. Assyria still exists. Edom still exists. They simply have different names. We call them by different names today. All right, now let's dig into all of the scriptures that are involved in the Day of the Lord. What I will do is rather than giving them all to you right now, I'll break them up into major categories. The concept of the Day of the Lord first appears to be introduced in Isaiah chapter 2. And then it continues on through 13, 24, 26, chapter 58. There's a little bit of the day of the Lord mentioned in Jeremiah. In Ezekiel, there are one, two, three, four references to the day of the Lord in Ezekiel. So we see that in Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel, the day of the Lord is being mentioned prominently. Although, because of the other events in the books, you may not have noticed that he was talking about the day of the Lord. And I'll go through it in a little more detail when we get to the minor prophets. Daniel makes two references to the day of the Lord. Two, one in chapter 9 and one in chapter 12. We have talked about chapter 12 extensively and how it links to the apocalypse or the revelation, the book of Revelation at the end. So the book. This book within the book appears in the major prophets and the book of Daniel, who is not a major prophet, but a part of the writings. It appears extensively in the books of the minor prophets. I'm going to list them very quickly so that we don't kill our reading time. Joel chapter 1, Joel chapter 2, Joel chapter 4, Amos chapter 5, Obadiah chapter 1. Zephaniah is almost completely committed to the day of the Lord. Zephaniah 1, Zephaniah 3. Zechariah 14 mentions the day of the Lord. I'll give you some verses that you have probably noticed, but you didn't really pay attention to where they belong. Therefore, this is in Zephaniah chapter 3, verse 4, verse 8. Therefore, wait for me, declares Adonai, for the day when I rise up for plunder, for my decision is to assemble nations, to gather kingdoms, to pour out my fury upon them. And then the most famous of the day of the Lord verses is Zechariah 14. And on that day, his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives that lies before Jerusalem on the east. Very specific. And the Mount of Olives shall be split in two from east to west by a very wide valley, so that one half of the mount shall move northward and the other half southward. For those of you who are very good in your geography, that temple platform with the Al-Aqsa Mosque and all of those other things that we fight and die for is going to be split in half because it's partly on the Mount of Olives. It will be split in half. And then another verse from chapter 14, Zechariah 14. Then the Lord will come and all the holy ones with him. On that day, there shall be no light, cold, or frost, and there shall be a unique day which is known to the Lord, neither day nor night, but at evening time there shall be light. The day of the Lord continues in Malachi, verse chapter 4. And again, one of the most famous verses pertaining to the day of the Lord. I will send you Elijah, the prophet, before the great and awesome day of the Lord comes. Here is where it becomes interesting because it continues from Malachi and it picks up again in Matthew 24 and Matthew 25. You see, Yeshua added more details into the day of the Lord that correlates exactly with the details both in the prophets and in the major and the minor prophets. But he adds a lot more detail. For instance, let me give you an example. You see all these things, do you not? Truly, I say to you, there will not be left here one stone upon another that will not be thrown down. And then he mentions the Mount of Olives. He goes up to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples ask him, "Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the time of the age?" This is where Yeshua links the day of the Lord with his return and the end of the age. Prior to that, it's always been on this day, on that day, on that day, on that great day of the Lord. We had no idea that it was also going to be the end of the world, so to speak, as we know it. And so Yeshua brings those three together. Now, Matthew 25, he does the same thing. But this time he gives us a little more detail. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. Before him will be gathered all the nations, and he will separate people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. I'll leave that for you to continue. That's in Matthew 25. But it's not done yet. It appears again in Acts 2, in particular, it starts in verse 20, where the apostles are quoting the book of Joel. And I will give wonders in the sky above and signs on the earth beneath. Blood and fire and smoky vapor. The sun will be turned to darkness and the moon to blood before the great and glorious day of Adonai comes. Here, the term for it is the day, the glorious day of Adonai. And it shall be that everyone who calls on the name of Adonai will be saved. But it's still not done, even though it's mentioned again in Acts. Paul picks it up and he mentions it in 1 Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 1, 1 Corinthians 5. 2 Corinthians 1, and then Philippians 1 mentions it, so that you may approve what is excellent and so be pure and blameless for the day of, here they use the term in some Bibles, Christ, But it's also in the for pure and blameless for the day of Messiah, because Christ is a more Christian term for what is the Messiah. It picks up again in 1 Thessalonians, as a matter of fact, extensively in 1 Thessalonians 1. And then it continues in 1 Thessalonians 5, where he gives instructions that the day of the Lord will not come like a thief in the night. While people are saying there is peace and security, then sudden destruction will come upon them as labor pains, fitting perfectly with the descriptions used in the prophets. Let's see. And then he tells us, for God did not destine us for wrath, but for obtaining salvation through our Lord Yeshua the Messiah. He died for us so that whether we be awake or asleep, we may live together with him. Fits perfectly with what Yeshua said. Not all of you will, even if you die, you'll still be alive. Some will be asleep and some will be awake. Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just as you, in fact, are doing. Second Thessalonians, he picks it up again. For that day will not come unless the rebellion comes first and the man of lawlessness is revealed, that same man mentioned in Daniel, the son of destruction, who opposes and exalts himself against every so-called God or object of worship, so that he takes his seat in the temple of God, proclaiming himself to be God. Again, we have mentioned from the other prophets that there will be an establishment of the daily sacrifices in Jerusalem in our time. They will, at some point, whether it be in a mobile tabernacle or in a permanent temple, we don't know, but there will be that tabernacle will be reestablished, and the Jewish people will resume the daily sacrifice, and this lawless one will come with armies from at least 10 other nations, intent upon stopping the daily sacrifice. It continues on. The day of the Lord continues in 1 Peter, in 2 Peter, in Jude, and then it obviously the book of Revelation, which, by the way, was revealed to John on the island of Patmos after they had tried to kill him multiple times. The entire revelation was revealed to him, and that is a different view of the day of the Lord, because you have now jumping back and forth between heaven and what's happening on earth. So the apocalypse, or the book of Revelation, is the day of the Lord intensely. It gives you details of when it's going to start from a heavenly perspective, what's going to be happening on the earth, which matches exactly with the things that the prophets have mentioned, and what's going to be the end of it. So the book of Revelation is meant to be a part of the books of the day of the Lord. So as you can see, our Father did not leave us without any understanding of what this day of the Lord thing is, and we should not be fearful, because he has woven it through all of the prophets and into the gospels and into the letters and into the book of Revelation with extreme excruciating detail. However, if you read the books the way they are and you're not paying attention and you're not looking for it, you will miss right over these verses and not notice what they mean and how they relate. Okay, so look at my time. Okay, we have a lot of chapters to get through. I will give you the order of the reading. Now remember, these books, these section of chapters, 13 through 23, have in them a mixing of the day of the Lord in the time before the fall of Israel and the time before the fall of Judah, and the far future mixed in, written in the same way that Isaiah is written, where God speaks to Isaiah and Isaiah reveals his thoughts, and he jumps back and forth across time, because our God is eternal. He is not limited by forward and backward, time in the past and time in the future, In his mind, in God's mind, it is all one. And so he's simply revealing things to his servants. So to start the reading tonight, I'd like to ask Rev Andy to read chapter 13, and then I'll go through the rest of the list. So Rev Andy will read chapter 13. I will read chapter 14. I'd like Shamashit Maria to read chapters 15 and 16. I would like Nadira to read chapters 17 and 18. I will read 19 and 20. Shamash Brian will read 21 and 22. And Reb Andy will finish us off with chapter 23. These are not long chapters. Well, I have one or two that are pretty long. But the rest of the chapters are very short. So we should be able to get through the reading fairly easily. And then we'll have time to ask questions at the end. So, Reb Andy, if you'd like to go ahead and start us out with
And
chapter 13.
end of Babylon and the world, the burden of Babylon, which Isaiah the prophet, son of Amos, saw. Lift up a banner on a bare mountain, raise a voice to them, wave a hand so that they may enter the gates of the nobles. I have commanded my consecrated ones, yes. I have called my mighty ones, my proud, exulting ones, for my fury, a sound of tumult in the mountains, like that of many people, a sound of uproar of kingdoms, of nations gathering. Adonai Tzavaot is mustering the army for battle. They are coming from a far country, from the end of the heavens. Adonai and the weapons of his wrath to destroy the whole land. Wail, the day of Adonai is near. It will come as destruction from Shaddai. Therefore, all hands will fall limp and every man's heart will melt. They will be terrified. Pain and anguish will take hold of them. They will writhe as a woman in labor. They will look aghast at one another, their faces aflame. Behold, the day of Adonai comes, cruel, full of wrath and fierce fury, to make the earth a desolation and destroy its sinners from it. For the stars of heaven and their constellations will not give their light. The rising sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light. I will punish the world for evil and the wicked for their iniquity. I will put an end to the arrogance of the proud and abase the insolence of tyrants. I will make people scarcer than gold, even than the pure gold of Ophir. Therefore, I will make heaven tremble and the earth will shake from its place at the wrath of Adonai Tzavaot in the day of his fierce fury. It will be like a hunted gazelle or like sheep with no one gathering. Each will return to his own people, each will flee to his own country. Everyone found will be thrust through. Everyone caught will fall by the sword. Their babies will be dashed in pieces before their eyes. Their houses will be plundered and their wives ravished. Behold, I will stir up against them the Medes, who will not value silver and will take no delight in gold. Their bows will cut down the young men, with no pity on the fruit of the worm womb, nor will their eye spare children. So Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of Chaldean pride, will be just as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. It will never be inhabited, nor will it be dwelt in from generation the generation, nor will an Arab pitch a tent there, nor will shepherds let flocks lie there, but desert creatures will lie down there. Their houses will be full of owls, ostriches will dwell there, and goat demons will dance there. Hyenas will howl in their citadels and jackals in their pleasant palaces. Her time is near to come. Her days will not drag on long.
For Adonai will have compassion on Jacob and will again choose Israel and settle them in their own land. The outsider will join himself with them and will cling to the house of Jacob. The peoples will take them and escort them to their place. The house of Israel will possess them in the land of Adonai as servants and handmaids. They will take their captors captive and rule over their oppressors. Now, in the day when Adonai will give you rest from your sorrow and your turmoil and from the hard service you were forced to do, you will take up this taunt against the king of Babylon and say, how the taskmaster has ceased. The raging oppressor, exactor of gold, has ceased. Adonai has broken the rod of the wicked, the scepter of the rulers, which struck the people in wrath with continual strokes, which ruled the nations in fury with relentless persecution. The whole earth is at rest and quiet. They break forth with a ringing cry. Even the cypress trees rejoice over you, along with the cedars of Lebanon. Since you were laid low, no woodcutter comes up against us. Sheol, from below, is excited about you, to meet you at your coming. He stirs up the dead spirits for you, even the chief ones of the earth. He makes all the kings of the nations rise up from their thrones. They will answer and say to you, even you have become as weak as us. Have you become like us? Your pomp is brought down to Sheol with the music of your harps. Maggots are spread out under you, and worms cover you. How you have fallen from heaven, O bright star, son of the dawn. How you are cut down to the earth, you who made the nations prostrate. You said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit upon the mount of meeting in the uttermost parts of the north. I will ascend above the high places of the clouds. I will make myself like Elyon. Yet you will be brought down to Sheol, to the lowest parts of the pit. Those who see you will stare at you, reflecting on what has become of you. Is this the one who struck the earth, who made kingdoms tremble, who made the world a wilderness and destroyed its cities, who never opened the house of its prisoners? All the kings of the nations, all of them, lie in glory, each in his own house. But you are cast out of your tomb as a discarded branch, garment of the slain, pierced with a sword, dumped into a stony pit, a corpse trodden underfoot. You will not join them in burial, because you ruined your land. You slaughtered your own people. The offspring of evildoers will never be named. Prepare slaughter for his children, for the iniquity of their fathers, so they would not rise up and possess the land or fill the face of the earth with cities. For I will rise up against them. It is a declaration of Adonai Sabaoth, and I will cut off from Babylon name and remnant, offshoot and offspring, declares Adonai. I will also make it a possession for the porcupine with marshes of water, and I will sweep it with the broom of destruction. It is a declaration of Adonai Sabaoth. Adonai Sabaoth has sworn, saying, surely as I thought of it, so it will be. As I have purposed, so it will stand. I will break Assyria in my land. On my mountains, I will trample him. Then his yoke will be taken off them, his burden removed from their shoulders. This is the purpose planned for the whole earth, and this is the hand that is stretched out over all the nations. For Adonai Sabaoth has purpose, so who will annul it? Since his hand is stretched out, Who will turn it back? In the year King Ahaz died, came the burden, came this burden. Do not rejoice, all of you of Philistia, that the rod struck you is broken. For from the serpent's root comes a viper, and its fruit will be a flying serpent. The firstborn of the poor will feed, and the needy will lie down in safety. I will kill your root with famine, and your survivors will be slain. Wail, O gate, cry, O city, melt away, all of you of Philistia, for smoke is coming from the north, and there is no stranger in its ranks. What will they answer, the messengers of the nation? For Adonai has founded Zion, and the afflicted of his people will find refuge in her.
15. The burden of Moab. For in the night that Ar is devastated, Moab is ruined. For in the night that Kir is devastated, Moab is ruined. He has gone up to the shrine, to Dibon, to the high places to weep. Moab wails over Nebo and Medeba. Every head is bald, every beard shaven. In the streets they wear sackcloth. On their housetops and in their plazas, everyone wails, weeping profusely. Heshbon and Eleleh cry out, their voices heard as far as Jahaz. Therefore the soldiers of Moab cry aloud. His soul faints within him. My heart cries out for Moab. Her fugitives are as far as Zoar, and as a three-year-old heifer, for by the ascent of Luhith they go up with weeping. For on the way of Horonaim they raise a cry of distress. The waters of Nimrim are desolate. The grass is withered away. The new grass withers. There is nothing green. Therefore, the riches they had gotten and whatever they had stored, they carry over the Wadi of Willows. For the cry has gone around the borders of Moab, the wailing to Eglaim, and the wailing to Beer Elim. For the waters of Dimon are full of blood. But I will bring on Dimon even more, a lion for those escaping from Moab and for those remaining in the land. 16. Send lambs to the ruler of the land, from Selah in the desert to the mountain of the daughter of Zion. For like fluttering birds scattered from a nest, so will the daughters of Moab be at the fords of Arnon. Give counsel, execute justice. Cast your shadow like night at noonday. Hide the refugees. Do not betray the fugitive. Let my refugees stay with you. Be for Moab a hiding place from the face of the destroyer. For the extortation is at an end. Devastation ceases. Oppressors are gone from the land. A throne will be established in mercy, and one will sit on it in truth, in the tent of David, one who seeks justice and is ready for righteousness. We have heard of the pride of Moab. Very proud is he of his haughtiness, his arrogance, his insolence, and his dishonest boasting. Therefore, Moab will wail for Moab. Everyone will wail. For the sweet cakes of Kir Hareseth, you will moan, utterly stricken. For the fields of Heshbon have withered, and well as the vine of Sibmah. Rulers of nations have trampled the choice clusters that reached as far as Jazer and into the desert. Its branches spread out and crossed to the sea. Therefore, I will weep bitterly for Jazer, for the vine of Sibmah. I will drench you with my tears, O Heshbon and Eleale, for on your summer and your harvest, the battle cry has fallen. Gladness and joy are taken away from the fruitful field. In the vineyards, no singing for joy, no happy shouting, no treading wine in the presses. I have made the shouting stop. Therefore, my heart moans for Moab like a lyre, and my inward part for Kir Heres. So it will be when Moab is weary upon the high place and comes to his sanctuary to pray, it will do him no good. This is the word of Adonai spoke, that the word that Adonai spoke concerning Moab in the past. But now Adonai has spoken, saying, within 3 years, As with the years of a hired worker, the glory of Moab will be disgraced. For all his large population, the remnant will be very small and feeble. Amen.
Isaiah chapter 17. This is a prophecy about Namesek. Namesek will soon stop being a city. It will become a heap of ruins. The cities of Aroer will be abandoned, given over to flocks lying down undisturbed. Ephraim will have no defenses. Damasek will cease to rule, and Aram's survivors will share the fate of Israel's finest son. Says Adonai Sevaoth, when that day comes, Jacob's glory will wane, and his full body grows thin, as when the harvester collects the standing grain, reaping the ears of grain with his arm. Yes, as when they glean the grain in Rephaim Valley, yet gleanings will be left, as when heating an olive tree, two or three olives at the very top, four or five on its fruitful branches. Says Adonai, the God of Israel. On that day, a person will heed his maker and turn his eye towards the Holy One of Israel. He will pay no heed to the altars made with his own hands. He will not turn toward what his fingers made, the sacred poles and standing stones for sun worship. When that day comes, his strong cities, which others abandoned when Israel advanced, will be like abandoned woods and forests. They will be laid waste. For you have forgotten the God who served you. Fail to remember the rock of your strength. So you plant pagan-style gardens and set out vine cuttings for a foreign god. Though you made them grow on the day you plant them, and in the morning your seedlings flower, the crop will vanish. The day disease comes, a day of incurable pain. Oh, the terror-stricken uproar of many people, roaring like the roar of the sea, and the rushing about of nations, rushing and surging like wild, wild waters. Yes, the nations will roar like a mighty ocean, but he will rebuke them. And far will they flee, driven like chaff by a mountain wind, like whirling dust in advance of the storm. As evening falls, you can see terror. Before sunrise, they have ceased to be. This is the lot of those who plunder us, the fate of those who prey on us. Isaiah chapter 18. Woe to the land of whirring winds beyond the rivers of Ethiopia. They send ambassadors by sea across the water in papyrus reed boats. Go, swift messengers, to a nation tall and bronze, to a people feared far and near, to a strong and conquering nation whose land is divided by rivers. All you inhabitants of the world, you who live on the earth, when a banner is hoisted on the mountains, look. When the shofar is blown, listen. For Adonai has said this to me, I will look on from my place and do nothing, like heat shimmering in the sun, like a cloud of dew in the heat of harvest. For before the harvest, when the flowering is over and the bud becomes a ripening grape, he will cut off the branches with pruning knives, lop off the twigs and make them away. They will all be left to the vultures in the mountains and to the wild animals in the fields. The vultures will feed on them in summer, and the wild animals of the fields in the winter. And at that time, tribute will be brought to Adonai Sevaoth. From a nation tall and brown, from a people feared far and near, from a strong and conquering nation whose land is divided by rivers, to the place where the name of Adonai Sevaoth lives, Mount Zion.
The burden of Egypt. Behold, Adonai rides upon a swift cloud and comes to Egypt. Egypt's idols tremble before him, and Egypt's heart melts within them. I will stir up Egyptian against Egyptian. Everyone will fight against his brother, and everyone against his neighbor, city against city, kingdom against kingdom. The spirit of Egypt will drain within it, and I will confuse its counsel. So they will resort to idols, charmers, mediums, and familiar spirits. I will give the Egyptians into the hand of a cruel master. A fierce king will rule over them. It is a declaration of Adonai Sabaoth. The waters from the sea will dry up, and the river will be drained dry. Then the channels will stink. The streams of Egypt will divide and dry up. Reeds and rushes will rot. The bulrushes by the Nile, by the mouth of the Nile, and everything sown by the Nile will wither, blow away, and be no more. Then the fishermen will lament. All who cast hooks in the Nile will mourn, and those who spread nets on the waters will languish. Moreover, the workers of fine flax and the weavers of white cloth will be ashamed. Her pillars will be crushed. All hired workers will be grieved in soul. The princes of Zoan are utter fools. Pharaoh's wisest counselors are stupid. How can you say to Pharaoh, I am the son of the wise, a son of ancient kings? Where then are your wise men? Let them tell you now. Let them know what Adonai Sabaoth has purposed against Egypt. The princes of Zoan are fools. The princes of Naph are deceived. The cornerstone of her tribes have led Egypt astray. Egypt has mixed within her a spirit of dizziness. They make Egypt stagger in every work as a drunkard staggers in his vomit. There will be no work for Egypt to do, for head or tail, palm branch or rush. And that day, Egypt will be like women trembling with fear because of the shaking hand of Adonai Sabaoth, which he is about to wave over it. The land of Judah will terrify Egypt. Anyone who mentions it will be afraid because of what Adonai Sabaoth has surely purposed against it. And that day, cities in the land of Egypt will speak the language of Canaan, swearing allegiance to Adonai Sabaoth. One used to be called the city of the sun. In that day, there will be an altar to Adonai in the middle of the land of Egypt, and next to the border, a pillar to Adonai. It will be as a sign and a witness to Adonai, Sabaoth, in the land of Egypt. For they will cry to Adonai because of the oppressors, and he will send them a savior and defender, and he will deliver them. So Adonai will make himself known to Egypt, and the Egyptians will know Adonai in that day. They will worship with sacrifice and offerings. They will vow to Adonai and fulfill it. So Adonai will strike Egypt, striking yet healing. So they will return to Adonai, and he will respond to them and heal them. And that day, there will be a highway from Egypt to Assyria, and the Assyrians will come to Egypt, and the Egyptians to Assyria, and the Egyptians will worship with the Assyrians. And that day, Israel will be the third, along with Egypt and Assyria, a blessing in the midst of the earth. For Adonai Sabaoth has blessed, saying, blessed is Egypt, my people, and Assyria, my handiwork, and Israel, my inheritance. And chapter 20. In the year that the Targum came to Ashdod, when Sargon, the king of Assyria, sent him, and he fought against Ashdod and captured it, at that time Adonai spoke by Isaiah, the son of Amoz, saying, go, remove the sackcloth from your loins and your sandals from your feet. So he did so, walking naked and barefoot. Then Adonai said, just as my servant Isaiah has walked naked and barefoot for 3 years as a sign and a wonder against Egypt and Ethiopia, so will the king of Assyria lead away the captives of Egypt and the exiles of Ethiopia, young and old, naked and barefoot, with their buttocks uncovered, to Egypt's shame. So they will be dismayed and ashamed because they hoped in Ethiopia and boasted in Egypt. Then the inhabitants of the coastland will say in that day, look, such is our hope. There we fled for help to be delivered from the king of Assyria. Now, how will we escape?
Isaiah 21, the burden of the desert by the sea. As windstorms sweep over the south, So it comes from the desert, a terrifying land. A harsh vision has been shown to me. The traitor betrays, and the plunderer plunders. Go up, Elam. Besiege, Media. I have put an end to all her groaning. Therefore my body is filled with pain. Pangs have taken hold of me, like the pangs of a woman in labor. I am bewildered by what I hear, terrified by what I see. My heart is bewildered. Terror overwhelms me. The twilight I long for has been turned into trembling. Set the table. Spread out the cloth. Eat. Drink. Rise up, you princes. Oil the shield. For Adonai has said to me, go, post a watchman. Let him declare what he sees. When he sees a chariot with a pair of horsemen, riders on donkeys, riders on camels, let him pay attention, very close attention. Then he cried out like a lion upon the watchtower, Adonai, I stand continually in the daytime, and I stay at my post every night. Look, here comes a chariot of men with a pair of horsemen. And one answered and said, fallen, fallen is Babylon. All the images of her gods are broken on the ground. O my people, crushed on the threshing floor, what I had heard from Adonai Tzevaot, God of Israel, I have declared to you. The burden of Dumah. One calls to me from Seir. Watchman, what is left of the night? Watchman, what is left of the night? The watchman said, morning comes, yet also it is night. If you would inquire, inquire. Come back again. The burden of Arabia. It is the desert brush of Arabia. You will stay for the night. You caravans of Dedanites. To whom who is thirsty bring water? Inhabitants of the land of Tema, meet the fugitive with food. For they fled from swords and from sword and from drawn sword, from bent bow and distress of war. For thus Adonai said to me, within a year, as within the years of a hired worker, all of the glory of Kedar will cease, and the remainder of the number of archers, the mighty men of the sons of Kedar, will be few. For Adonai, God of Israel, has spoken. The burden of the valley of vision. What is the matter with you now? For you have gone up to the rooftops. You are full of noise. A boisterous city, an exultant town. Your dead were not slain with the sword, nor dead in battle. All your rulers have fled together, they then captured with a bow. All who were caught were taken into exile together, though they had fled far off. Therefore I said, look away from me. Let me weep bitterly. Do not try to comfort me about the ruin of the daughter of my people. For my Lord Adonai Tzevaot has a day of panic, trampling and confusion in the valley of vision, of tearing down a wall, a catastrophe on the mountain. Elam took up the quiver with chariots of men and horsemen, and Kir uncovered the shield. So it will come to pass that your choicest valleys will be full of chariots and horsemen posted at the gate. So he will expose Judah's defense, and in that day you will look for the armor in the forest house. Then you will see the breaches in the walls of the city of David, for there will be many. Though you collect the water of the lower pool, though you counted the houses of Jerusalem, you broke down the houses to fortify the wall. You even made a reservoir between the two walls for the water of the old pool, but you did not look to the maker or consider the one who planned it long before. Now on that day, Adonai Elohei Tzevaot will call for weeping and wailing, for baldness and putting on sackcloth. But instead there is joy and gladness, slaughtering cattle and killing sheep, meat and drinking wine. Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we will die. But Adonai Tzevaot revealed in my ears, surely this is sin. Surely this sin will not be atoned for until you die, says Lord Adonai Tzevaot. Thus says Lord Adonai Tzevaot, go, say this to the steward, to Shebna, who is over the house. What are you doing here? And who are you to be here? That you cut out a grave for yourself, carving out a tomb on the height, chiseling a crypt for yourself in the rock. Behold, strong man Adonai is about to hurl you headlong and seize you firmly. He will roll you up tightly and toss you like a ball into a large country. There you will die, and your glorious chariots will be the shame of your master's house. I will remove you from your post and pull you down from your station. In that day, I will summon my servant Eliakim, son of Hilkiah. I will clothe him in your robe and fasten your sash on him. I will give him your authority into your hands. So he will be a father to the inhabitants of Jerusalem and to the house of Judah. I will set the key of the house of David upon his shoulder. What he opens, no one can shut. What he shuts, no one can open. I will fasten him as a peg in a firm place, and he will be a throne of honor to his father's house. They will hang all the glory of his father's house on him, offspring and posterity, all the small vessels from bowls to all the jars. In that day, Adonai Tzevaot says, the peg that was fastened in a firm place will give way, break away and fall, and the load that was on it will be cut off, for Adonai has spoken.
Shaking, shaken of Tyre and Sidon, the burden of Tyre. Wail, ships of Tarshish, for Tyre is destroyed. There is no house and no harbor. From the land of Cyprus, it was revealed to them. Be still, inhabitants of the coastland, you merchants of Sidon. Your messengers crossed the sea. On many waters, the grain of Shihor, the harvest of the Nile, was her revenue and the marketplace of nations. Be ashamed, O Sidon, for the sea has spoken, the stronghold of the sea, saying, I have not writhed or given birth. I have not reared young men or brought up maidens. When the report reaches Egypt, they will be in anguish at the report about Tyre. Cross over to Tarshish. Well, you inhabitants of the island, is this your jubilant city, whose antiquity is from long ago, whose feet have taken her to settle in far-off lands? Who planned this against Tyre, the crowning city, whose merchants were princes, whose traders were the honored of earth? Adonai Tzevaot has planned it, to defile the pride of all glory, to shame all the honored of earth. Overflow through your land like the Nile, O daughter of Tarshish. There is no restraint anymore. His hand has stretched out over the sea. He has shaken the kingdoms. Adonai has given a commandment concerning Canaan to destroy its strongholds. He said, you will exalt no more, O crushed virgin daughter of Sidon. Arise, cross over to Cyprus. Even there, you will have no rest. Look, the land of the Chaldeans, this is the people who no longer exist. Assyria set it up for desert animals. They set up their siege towers. They stripped its palaces. They made it a ruin. Well, you ships of Tarshish, for your stronghold is destroyed. Then it will come about in that day that Tyre will be forgotten for 70 years, like the days of one king. At the end of 70 years, it will happen to Tyre just as in the song of the prostitute. Take a harp, stroll about the city, forgotten harlot. Skillfully play many songs, so you may be remembered. Then it will come about after the end of 70 years that Adonai will take note of Tyre. She will return to her trade and will prostitute herself with the kingdoms of the world on the face of the earth. Yet her profit and her wages will be set apart to Adonai. They will not be stored up or hoarded, for her profit will be for those who dwell in the presence of Adonai, as ample food and as fine clothing.
Thank you. Thank you to all who have read tonight. While we're looking at that chapter, past chapter, I have one question for those of you who are astute and catch on to things that we read previously. Who conquered Tyre? Anyone wants to volunteer an answer?
I'm gonna try. I feel like they were conquered by a few different empires, like maybe Assyria, Nebuchadnezzar, and even Alexander the Great, possibly.
Yes, they definitely were conquered by Alexander the Great. As a matter of fact, he was the actual only person who was able to enter into Tyre. He did it by trickery. Nebuchadnezzar, if you remember, after Nebuchadnezzar had destroyed Jerusalem, he marched north to conquer Tyre. He built siege works to try to get in, but because the city is set on an island off the coast, Nebuchadnezzar could never quite get in. He spent a lot of resources getting there. He got angry, marched down to Egypt, and instead enslaved and conquered Egypt and Ethiopia, which is what we just read tonight. So Nebuchadnezzar tried to conquer Tyre, put them in distress, didn't quite do it, but they were separated from the rest of the land, and they suffered a 70-year period, which, by the way, was the time that Jerusalem was separated from its people, 70 years. God had proclaimed, you're not coming back to rebuild Jerusalem for 70 years. King Cyrus freed them, and he freed Tyre. And then, of course, Tyre reestablished itself, rebuilt its walls. And many years later, Alexander the Great did come in and actually was able to breach the walls for the first time. No one had been able to do it prior. He came in, he took Nebuchadnezzar's battle plan, and he implemented it perfectly. And he tricked them and conquered them and came over their walls and defeated them for the very first time. But that 70-year sentence that he mentions here in the scriptures happened at the exact same time that the 70 years were proclaimed for the people of Jerusalem. So that is the story that we just got to reading. I'm sorry?
I have a question. Where is Tyre? What is Tyre?
It's off the coast. It's in the north. Let me see if I can try to picture this for you. You know where the north of Israel is, right?
Yes.
And you know north of there is Lebanon.
Yes.
Okay. Just off the coast there is a little island that used to have a land bridge. Now it's actually an island, but it used to have a bridge from the land that would go straight over into this little island. So it's off the coast of Lebanon to the south. They were famous for trading with the Israelites. They got along okay. They were cheating each other quite a bit, but they got along okay. But Tyre was very wealthy because ships from the Mediterranean, Greece and other places would come in and trade there. So they got extremely wealthy and very arrogant, and they built walls. In the time of Jerusalem, the southern kingdom, when Nebuchadnezzar came in, there was a piece of land that was there. Today, if you go there, that land is submerged, and you'll see ruins from the battles of Babylon Assyria, Persia, and Greece, and you'll see a little island sitting there. But the ruins still stick up out of the water where the land used to be, where it used to connect to this little island. It's a little island off the coast of Lebanon.
So this was during Isaiah's time that it existed, correct?
It is, yes, it existed well into, well, it's still there right now. It's just that now it's an island. It used to be a little piece of land, like a land bridge. You could actually drive horses and wagons and the whole bit across that land to get to the little island. But now it's just a little island sitting off the coast with surrounded by water. So it's still there in Lebanon, and it's not prominent anymore. Just like the scripture said, you're not going to be wealthy like you were before, and they aren't. Tyre is not nowhere near as glorious as it used to be. It used to be one of the great cities of the ancient world. Now it's a little island surrounded by ruins, beautiful ruins, though. And the Romans, of course, came later and built their stuff, and they're still standing. Their arches, their columns, they're also still standing on Tyre. So everybody has marched through Tyre and conquered it by now. So it's not a great prominent city like it was in the days of Israel and Judah. Okay, so do we have any questions about anything we've read and the Day of the Lord? The Day of the Lord is extensive. It's not a simple subject, and it has a great deal of details in it that, to be honest with you, even I was surprised by how deeply it's embedded in the scriptures and how much we all miss it. We just pass right over it when we read. We don't even notice it. We just keep saying in that day. I'm sorry, did you want to say something, Shannon?
I'm just trying to go to the second question. I'm trying to go through the questions to answer them. Isaiah chapter 22. Mm-hmm. Trying to figure out the vision or future, the answer to the question.
Is it that's a good one. Isaiah 22 is a very good one. I wonder if anybody else out there is willing to answer that question for you. No one?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
In Isaiah 22, who is he referring to? Actually, and the question is Isaiah chapter 22 a vision of our future? Or did these events happen in Isaiah's future?
It seems like some of it was in his future, and then
yes,
it seems like it's making reference to our future as well.
Yes, it is. It's a mixture, but it's mostly about his future, about Isaiah's future, meaning it was a prophecy of what was going to happen to Judah. Although mixed in, yes, there are pieces of the day of the Lord in our future. And because we're running out of time, I won't have time to be able to point them out to you, but yes, it is a mix. And what about, let's see. Who are we talking about in Isaiah chapter 14? Who wants to quick guess?
Is that Satan?
I'm sorry?
Is Satan?
Yes. Yeah, well, I think you're saying Hasatan. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's right. That's who he's talking about. And you'll notice that he starts out talking about the present day. Or, I'm sorry, in Isaiah's day. And then he suddenly switches over and says, "How you have fallen from heaven, O bright star." One of Hasatan's names, because he was an angel at the throne of God, was the bright and morning star. That was one of his names. He was literally a beautiful angel, the bright and morning star. When he was in the Garden of Eden, he was covered with jewels. He sparkled. He was, you know, he shone in the light. He was not something you could ignore. And of course, you know, you fell for that. But but the point is that he had beautiful names. He had an impressive, he had, from what it looks like, He had rule over the whole earth at that time during the time of Eden. He had rule over the entire earth. O bright morning star, son of the dawn, how you are cut down to earth. And now he is cut down to earth, as Yeshua also mentioned. He is stuck here. He can leave. He goes up to heaven from time to time and reports. Like I said before, all angels, good or bad, report to God, to the Father. He gives them authority to do the things that they do, and he takes it away when they don't, when, you know, when they're, he takes it, he gives them authority and he takes it away. Let's put it that way. They can't do anything to us unless he approves it, he allows it. And the only reason why he allows it is because he knows that we will grow from the suffering, from the problems. It creates in us a greater, stronger spirit, which will then transcend to the next life. But he did say, I will ascend to heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit upon the mount of meeting in the uttermost parts of the north. He will inspire the lawless one who comes at the end and breaks up the and stops the daily sacrifices. But he won't be there. He will be inspiring that person, influencing him, whispering in his ears, telling him beautiful things and amazing things and how great he's going to be. And so he will, although he will sit in the temple, this person, this lawless one, will sit in the temple. It is very clear revelation that he is being influenced by this same bright star, son of the dawn.
Thank you for joining us as we explore the complexity and poetry of the book of Isaiah. Join us each week as we continue to examine the writings of the prophet Yeshayahu, bringing his words into our modern viewpoint.